6 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. Welcome into the whole show powered by Chevron, live from the Aloe Fiber Studios. We're doing something a little bit different today. Normally, I don't have a co-host. I just have a producer, but Mike is filling in today. So we need the big guns to come in here and help out Michael Kirkpatrick on the other side of the glass. I got Mike Sanford in studio. Welcome. Oh, that was not that loud. Susan and Cheryl didn't love that. Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm doing awesome. That applause was probably akin to maybe how the Western Kentucky fan base feels about me after 2 years and me getting fired. I think the Boise State fan base or the Notre Dame fan base would be a little bit louder.
Oh,
That's probably like the Minnesota fan base. They're not super high on me. It just depends on where I coached and how I'm viewed. I'm the same person, same coach, but it's so funny in this industry, man. You just never know exactly how things are going to go until you play ball games.
So many interesting things I want to talk to you about. You've had a long career in the coaching world, of course, and as you mentioned, head coach for Western Kentucky. You went to a bowl game, though.
Yeah, year one, bowl game. You know, we had like 18 new starters consecutive years, which is never a really good recipe. You know, it's all about timing. You know, when you're coaching and you take over a new head job, timing is everything. And I had bad timing. I took over for Jeff Brohm. He left for Purdue the year before. You know, Western Kentucky had the best season in its school history, went 11-2, fantastic season. And I go to the bowl game. Like, you know, they brought me there as the next head coach. Jeff Brohm had already left for Purdue, and you know, Nick Holt was the interim head coach. They win the bowl game, and I start going through watching the game, and I'm like, oh, is he back? Nope. Is he back? Nope. Is he back? Nope. I probably should have done a little bit more homework before I took this job.
Well, you talk about timing being everything too. For those of you that don't know, Mike Sanford, you were the interim coach for the Colorado Buffs last year too. You got their win, of course. Talk about timing, though, because I thought you were going to be in the running. You were in those conversations, and then here comes prime time.
Well, you know, the timing of the actual time where I took over as the interim was actually fantastic.
Yeah.
With regards to the first game, we had started out 0-5. You know, that team, one thing that people don't talk about much, even like with regards to comparing what Coach Prime is doing this year to what Carl Durrell did last year, is that year was a bit of an outlier. And everybody says, like, well, you know, Coach Durrell, this didn't do great. Coach Durrell was, he was Pac-12 Coach of the Year in 2020.
Right. Yeah, people.
Now, granted, everybody put that. The asterisk by the 2020 season across football that it was a COVID year. I get that. 2021, fairly competitive season. Wasn't great, but fairly competitive. Very similar to this season for CU. But right before I had already taken the job, but CU has a fairly long process of going through a background check. I had a 4 or 6 week background check before it processed and I could actually officially take the job over as the offensive coordinator. During that 6 weeks, it was a mass exodus because it was the first year of the transfer portal.
Yeah.
So we lost Brendan Rice, Makai Blackman. We lost Mark Perry to TCU, who started in a national championship, and really a total of about 13 starters. So what that forced our 2020 season to be is a lot of true freshmen, redshirt freshmen starting games, and a schedule that included TCU, a 10-win Air Force team, Minnesota, who won 9 games. That was our non-conference. And then when I took over as interim head coach, the timing of it was good because we actually had a bye week. So I was able to implement some changes, try to, you know, just spend some time with the players because they all are like, what does my future hold? You know, and I tried to reassure them that at least for right now, let's focus on what we can. And, you know, we reestablished our culture for the remaining 7 games, which was an 8-week stretch, including the bye week. And we had Cal come into town, who Cal looked good early in the season. You know,
sure. Their
running back, I believe it's Jade Knott. I don't know if that's the running back had like 200 and some odd yards against Washington. Like they were doing some really good things early in that season. But our defense came alive. We won the game in front of a completely sold out Folsom Field and they stormed the field and it was incredible. Now the problem is we still had the same roster and we had a 4-game stretch to finish the season out that included at USC, at Washington, and then Utah and Oregon.
Yeah, those are going to be difficult tasks.
Those were tough. Yeah, and as we've seen even this year, particularly between, we had Oregon State as well in that mix. The one game that I thought was very winnable was Arizona State, and they had fired Herm Edwards. They had a new interim head coach, and he made a quarterback change, and that quarterback caught fire in Folsom Field against us. Bourget, I believe, or Bourgeot or something like that. And so I think the one game that we had a chance to win was Arizona State, just in terms of similar situations. But, man, when you go up to play at Oregon State, you saw how good their O-line and D-line play was. It was far superior. And then, you know, Oregon was building into what they are now. Pretty much had the same roster as what you're seeing right now, minus a D-lineman or two. USC was better last season. I know that's crazy. They were much better last season.
Yeah, they kind of hit a weird stretch there in this season, where maybe you're second guessing them a little bit. Still very good football team.
Yeah, talent everywhere.
Let me ask you this, man. Did you think that at that point, you know, going through the season, knowing it was going to be a tough battle at the end, you get the win, though. It seems like you were getting buy-in. I mean, it seemed like fan base was kind of interested in like what you could do. Did you think you were going to be actually in the running for the next head coaching job for the Buffs?
I was told that, you know, and I think Rick George meant that when he said that to me. But I also know I've been around this industry since I was a little kid. My dad coached and still coaching. My dad's actually coaching the Faith Lutheran Crusaders in Las Vegas to the Nevada State Championship game.
Oh, let's go,
man. A week from next Tuesday at Allegiant Stadium where the Raiders play. I'll be in Vegas for Thanksgiving. So what an opportunity for my dad. But I grew up in the coaching industry, and I do understand, you know, that you have to win games. I mean, we won one, but you know, for me to have a legitimate chance at getting this job, I think we would have had to have upset one of those big four, whether it be Washington, Oregon, USC, or Utah. That was a tall task, and probably win that Arizona State game after and of course we did beat Cal, which was a really good win.
Now, I've had you on the show before, and again, appreciate you coming in studio, man. It's awesome to get you in here.
You guys got a big time studio here, man.
You know, you should have seen the last place. You know, you would have been like, wow, this is a breath of fresh air.
The last one was more of like a registered National Historic Landmark.
Yeah, pretty much.
And this is more kind of bougie. This is upscale, man.
We got windows, man.
Yeah, windows.
Look at this.
We're soundproofed in here. This
soundproof.
Is
soundproof.
This is big time.
The glass, you can look across at the beautiful Micah back there. He's doing a great job. But you could actually look outside and see what the weather's going to do. You're
not
just
bad.
In this box. So we're excited about that, of course. But, you know, when you looked at all of this, when did you kind of know that you were going to be out and primetime was like, we heard all the rumors. And I think there were a lot of people, even me at some point, was like, I don't know how realistic that really is. I don't know if that makes sense. But then every single day, those rumors kept heating up. And then here he is. When did you know? What did you know?
I would say, you know, just like anything, I mean, you think Rick George was very candid and upfront with me about, you know, the timing of it all, you know, that he was interviewing people as the season was going on. And I think that what ultimately happened is, if you look back at the last really 20 years of CU football, you know, there needed to be something significant to reinvigorate this fan base.
Yeah.
Because I think there was starting to become an alienation of, you know, this fan base from where the actual product had been on the field, really minus a Mike McIntyre 2016 campaign that was very good. This program has had a lot of losing seasons. And so if you were just going to bring in maybe a retread that had been a head coach at, you know, a Power 5 school but was on the market, I don't know if that would have really excited the fan base. And by doing what Rick George did, nobody can argue with at least the excitement, buzz, you know, national exposure and revenue that Deion Sanders' name has brought to this program and brought immediately. And so I thought it was once I heard that name floating and I saw that other programs that he was linked to had taken a pass. You don't know exactly what happened, but like Auburn, I thought was going to be where Deion Sanders was going to end up. It didn't happen. I'm like, he's coming to see you. I just knew it. Like, I told my wife that, and everything. They're like, no way. No. I'm like, no, it's happening, because Rick George needs to hit a home run with regards to winning the offseason, selling season tickets, selling merchandise. And without question, from those perspectives, It was an absolute home run.
Did you ever talk? Was there any crossover? Did you ever talk to Primetime?
I did. Yeah, I interviewed with him. I actually sat down with Shadur, sat down with Coach Prime. He was he was great to me. You know, just in our one on one time. You know, he did have he has a big team. It's kind of like the Drake song. I had a really big team. Mm. He's got a big team, and they were in the meeting
so
with me.
How many people were talking in this meeting?
I mean, in that meeting, it was Coach Prime and about four others around the table.
Is that normal?
I've personally never been around that.
It's usually just one on one.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's a head coach and you know, and maybe like an offensive coordinator interview. I've had it before where, you know, like when I worked for Jim Harbaugh at Stanford, whenever somebody came in to interview, he had his entire football staff in there. And I thought it was actually brilliant because as a young coach for me, I'm 24 years old. I had a chance to really learn football and learn how to interview. And I had some, you know, in that room at Stanford, other coaches or people that I watched interview was David Shaw, a future Pac-12 head coach that I worked for later. You know, Willie Taggart, who went on, I ended up working for him later at Western Kentucky when he was the head coach. You had DJ Durkin. You had Scott Schaefer, who went on to be the head coach at Syracuse. You had Derek Mason, who went on to be the head coach at Vanderbilt. And then even me, a young 24-year-old, ended up being a head coach myself at Western Kentucky, and then again as an interim head coach at CU. So it was a powerful experience to be involved with that. Coach Prime didn't have his coaches as much as he had, you know, different members of I think his overall team.
His entourage.
It's
thing.
Not no? I wouldn't call it an entourage. I'd say,
are they football people or are they just like?
I think there's, you know, I don't. To be honest, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure it out as I went in real time. I think he brought. I think a trusted confidant or two that have been with him since the very beginning. I'm talking youth football, prime prep, you know, Trinity, you know, even the time that Shadur was playing at Trinity in Dallas. He had, I think somebody was more of his business manager from the perspective of like all the, you know, the external stuff outside of football. But it was a really good experience. And he was really, really friendly, very personable. Enjoyed my time sitting down with him. And then I ended up sitting down with Shadur right after I met with Coach Prime. And, you know, I'll never forget Shadur. I asked him, I'm like, hey, where do you think, you know, this program needs to go? Where do you want to get better? And the thing that he said, which at the time I was kind of like, I was a little bit taken aback by what he said, but he just said, we need to get some receivers around here. And he was right. He was right. And boy, did they get some receivers.
They got some receivers. Now, you know, now the issue obviously with the Buffs is can you protect the quarterback so he can get the ball to those receivers? And we'll see what happens with that. So now, after that, you talk to Shadur, you talk to Primetime, you see ultimately what happens here. Do you find yourself rooting for this Buffs team? Or is it weird for you? Kind of like, I want it there, I get it, but it's still just an interesting dynamic.
So I'd grown up... you know, my dad was coaching at USC through the late 80s, early 90s into the mid 90s. You know, that was the height of CU football. And, you know, Southern California, where I grew up, had so many ties to CU, so many different people from the Southern California area go to CU and then go back home to Southern California. So there's like a big CU Buffs contingency. And then one of my dad's best friends in coaching is a legend at CU, both as a player and as a coach, is Brian Cabral, truly a best friend of my dad's. And so I've always been just a closet diehard CU rooter. And so I having a chance to go to CU as a coach, I fell in love even deeper with CU. I love Boulder. I love Colorado as a state. I don't want to leave this place. It's amazing. And I do, what I would say is this, is obviously there's an inevitable feeling of, you know, you wish you were a part of it. You know, I'm a coach, I'm a competitor, I love the place. But on the other side, the opportunity that Carl Durrell gave me to be the offense coordinator at CU ultimately led to one of my most enjoyable times in coaching was being the interim head coach and just really investing in these players, investing in, you know, even making trips to the fraternities and sororities and just kind of trying to galvanize a great student section for the remaining games in the season. I find myself watching every single CU game, and I find myself watching every single Coach Prime press conference. Now I cover as a member of the media.
Yes, yeah.
And you like him, you hate him, you're somewhere in between. I'll say this. You watch him.
You can't look away.
You watch him.
No, everything he does is highly entertaining. Mike Sanford joining me in studio today. We got a busy show coming up. Are you going to be okay? We have a CSU insider. Kevin Lytle is going to be joining us from the Colorado one. Are you going to be okay with that interview?
I'll tell you what. I went to my first CSU game at Canvas Stadium after having coached against him multiple times. Canvas Stadium, what a place.
Yeah. And I know you're a Boise State guy. Of course, played for Boise State. That was a tough game for you guys.
Yeah, especially for the crowd that stayed.
If you were a Boise State fan, don't get me started on the canvas clash. Is that what it is in the fourth quarter?
Canvas chaos.
Canvas chaos. That's what it is.
Yeah,
it's something catchy, right? Yeah, that's good. Let's talk. We're going to keep Mike in with us. We have the Jack Howell Show coming up later on at noon today. Thanks to our friends at Crazy Carl's Pizza. 21 minutes after the hour. Love having you in, man. Thanks for being
here. Great being here. Appreciate you, Brady.
All right, we'll be right back.
Sports, interviews, and more. Preps Rewind with Mike Danson. Saturdays at 10 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, this is Mark Johnson, voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, and you're listening to The Hull Show with my buddy Brady Hull on 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back into the show. It's The Hull Show powered by Chevron, live from the Aloe Fiber Studios. It's such an honor to get you in here, man. Mike Sanford is joining me in studio. Let me ask you this, Mike. Coaching, still want to do it? Or because you're good at this. You're good at the radio thing. You do the TV thing. I know you hang out with my guy, Chris Dempsey. I mean, you're all over the place. That side's got to be fun. Probably a little less stressful, I would imagine.
Well, I get to be a dad, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, you have reasonable hours and stuff.
Yeah. You know what's fun is that I'll never, I mean, until I'm probably 78 years old, I'll never not coach in a calendar year. I've coached a ton in the last calendar year since I was the interim head coach at CU. You know, it started with being in Frederick at our church. We go to Rocky Mountain Christian Church in Frederick, and they have one of the best youth basketball leagues and programs, I think, maybe in America. It started out, I was reffing, and it was a blast wearing the stripes, being on the other side after wearing out refs for so long. I was like, somebody try to get after me a little bit. I'm like, wait
a minute.
Karma
come back at you? Did you yell that?
Karma just slapped me right upside the freaking head. But then I ended up jumping in and being an assistant coach with a fifth and sixth grade basketball team.
Oh.
And it was so much fun. And I'm like, you know what? Coaching is coaching. The compensation was a little different.
Fifth and sixth grade compared to, you know,
Power Five.
FBS Power Five. Yeah. A slight difference there.
And then that led to being a youth softball coach for my daughter's team.
Awesome.
And I took over this fall as the head coach of the Savages in Carbon Valley. And then, you know, I had an awesome opportunity. My neighbor, Randy Klatt,
Bruce has had him on his show several times. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so the neighbor's Randy.
Okay.
So that's the uncle. So it'd be Gary Klatt's brother.
Klatt, Randy, yes.
And then the uncle to Jason Klatt and Joel Klatt. Jason Klatt is the head coach at Meade High School. And I had a chance this year to be a volunteer wing back and tight end and receiver coach. And it was the time of my life. Being able to see a really young team at Meade High School start 1-4 and then end up finishing out with a share of the league title, finishing the season on a high note, and then making the playoffs. And just seeing just the kind of impact you can have. Not only being able to impact like where they start to where they can get to in one season in football, but also as people. And my wife and I have really just jumped full speed in the Meade Maverick community. It's been so much fun.
We've had Meade on we broadcast their game several times over the years, too. Of course, we do a lot of these different games.
We missed you this year, Brady. Where were you?
I don't do them. You get after Tanner. You met Tanner.
You're the general manager here.
Yeah,
you have the ability to make a decision.
I'm small picture. Tanner's more the big picture.
I have some influence. Maybe we'll get a game or two next fall.
Maybe next year.
I think that'd be a good idea.
You're big. You're tall and you're big and you're scary. And you are a football coach, so I might lean in on that a little bit. We'll figure something out. We'll talk. Mike's going to be joining me throughout the day. You're staying with me till 2, right?
2 o'clock.
That's going to be fun, man.
It's going to be a blast.
So we got a lot to get to. Kevin Lytle from the Fort Collins, Colorado is going to come on and talk to us about what the Rams need to do. They got to win out. They got to win 2 games to essentially get into a bowl game. Can they do it? They should. They have Nevada and Hawaii coming up, but just see what Hawaii did to Air Force. So you go to Hawaii, it's just a different world.
Where's CSU playing them?
In Hawaii.
On the Rock.
Yeah, so home against Nevada this week, and then next week they're traveling to Hawaii. So we'll see. Kevin's coming up next. Mike Stanford kind of works because you were with Stanford.
Yeah,
that could be kind of fun.
That's the longest I coached at one school. It was 5 years. I was there two different times. Oh, so yeah, people have screwed that one up for years.
Dude, there's so many things we could pick your brain on. All the football career that you went through, all the big names that you've talked to, what you've done, man, there's just so much to it. So again, we appreciate just getting a slice of that today here on the program. 30 minutes after the hour. Let's jump out real quick. Kevin Lytle coming up next. It's the whole show powered by Chevron. Let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
Hi, I'm Darren Dunn, Director of Athletics at the University of Northern Colorado, and you're listening to the whole show, 1310 KFKA.
Minutes after the hour. Welcome back in. It is the whole show powered by Chevron. I got the Mike Sanford sitting in studio. Made the drive up here, man. How was the drive? Was it good?
I'm a Weld County resident.
So it wasn't that far of a drive.
It wasn't bad at all. This is the county seat right here in Greeley. So yeah, you gotta visit the big city every once in a while.
You gotta get in here once in a while.
Even though I think I'm slightly closer to downtown Denver than I am downtown Greeley. But it shows the variety of Weld County.
Yeah.
I love living in Weld County.
And how much it's grown over the years. Speaking of being like the center of everything, Kevin Lytle of the Fort Collins, Colorado, when he's our CSU Rams insider. You going to be good with this interview? Is there any bad blood?
No, not at all.
CU, all that stuff?
Actually, small, you know how the world is so small. So my former sports information director at Western Kentucky is Kyle Neves, the SID for CSU. So we've stayed in touch.
Oh, so Lytle will be best friends.
I'm kind of a ceremonial Rams fan-ish.
You know everybody.
Yeah, that's way. When you move 14 times in 18 years, you seem to meet a lot of people.
Okay, we got Kevin. Kevin, are you there?
Absolutely.
How you doing, my friend?
Doing great. It's funny, the small world of college athletics, isn't it?
It is. I didn't make that connection with you and Neves. That was crazy. But man, I'm slow. Kevin knows this. Kevin, a big weekend coming up, the next two weekends on the football side of things. Rams got to take care of it. They got mission one accomplished, beat San Diego State last week, sent Brady Hoken to retirement, and now they have Nevada coming up. Let me ask you this. Is this going to feel like, you know, have all the bad blood that it did last year? I know you put together a piece in the Fort Collins, Colorado one about that. Or has that died down a bit?
Yeah, it's definitely tamer than last year. You know, there was a lot last year. It felt very much like a real rivalry. I mean, Ken Wilson had a lot of very pointed comments at Jay Norvell. Even Coach Alt out there, former coach in Nevada, had some. Norvell didn't say anything pregame. He didn't want to really wade into that, but obviously it was on his mind because he confronted Ken Wilson pregame, and then postgame he did kind of respond. But this year I think it's calmer. You know, Jay Norvell came out and, you know, kind of praised Nevada and the people he knows there. Ken Wilson kind of likewise, you know, praised Norvell and the work he's done building programs. But the players definitely know, you know, Andrew Cannon, a guy that was at Nevada last year and with Norvell prior to that, came over to CSU, and he kind of smiled and said, yeah, I've had this one circled. I want to win this game. So it's still there. It's just not as kind of fiery, I guess, as last year.
Kevin, just looking at this Nevada team that started out the season, I would say maybe as the absolute worst team in FBS football. And while they're not much better than where they started the season out, they have shown some life on the defensive side of the ball. There was a telltale sign for me earlier on in the season when I saw quarterback coach Nate Costa just quit middle of training camp, and a special teams coordinator, if I'm not mistaken, also just leave the staff. Like, these things never happen in college football. They do in the off season, but they never happen from the months of August until December when a season's really live. What have you heard about what's going on with Ken Wilson, his staff, and just the overall culture and the state of this Nevada program?
Yeah, totally. You nailed it. Those are very strange. You do not see that. That was right before the season started. I can only imagine how chaotic it must have been in that building to, you know, try and, you know, shuffle things right before the season started. And, you know, at one point, you know, we wondered, I think Brady, we talked about this on air, that it was not impossible for Nevada to go winless, you know, after they got, you know, smoked by Idaho. You know, they built a lead against Texas State and then, you know, gave it up pretty significantly. But like you said, they seem to have settled in, playing a little better defensively, got a couple wins over New Mexico and San Diego State. So they've settled a bit, but man, I think the pressure's still on. I know it's only year two, and obviously some of Ken Wilson's, or a lot of Ken Wilson's, anger and comments last year were because, you know, the roster had been gutted a little bit. But, you know, let's be real honest, that's just the way of college football these days, of you have to build a roster pretty quickly. So I think there's still pressure. I wonder if Nevada, you know, would pay to make a change if, you know, the final couple games go sideways. But there's definitely pressure. You know, in today's college football, it's crazy. You know, it used to be you get 4 or 5 years pretty much no matter what. Now you have schools saying, well, you know, we're 2 years in, you know, why aren't we winning? So you have to win quickly, or pressure's on.
I was just talking about that with Mike, you know, how it's changed over the years, where I used to always feel comfortable saying 2 to 3 to let your recruits settle in and become part of your program, find the guys that fit your program and your philosophy. But with the transfer portal, you're just not going to get that luxury much anymore. And on the CSU side of things, Kevin, that's why I think finishing at least with 6 wins, becoming bowl eligible, is just so important for Jay Norvell in this stint. Not to, you know, you and I have talked about this, not saying he's on a hot seat, but if somehow they don't find a way to at least get to 6, you wonder if next year becomes the hot seat year.
Yeah, the off-season tone will in a lot of ways be determined by these 2 weeks, just from the, you know, the fan base tone, if you will. If you beat Nevada, go to Hawaii, beat Hawaii and get to a bowl, I think people will be feeling pretty optimistic, excited. You know, CSU hasn't been to a bowl since 2017. You know, they would be knocking off a lot of markers that CSU hasn't had in a while. You know, it would be most wins since 2017. If they beat Nevada, it would tie for the most wins at Canvas Stadium in a season. There are just a lot of different things. A 3-game win streak, which is what they would need to reach a bowl, would be a first time since 2018, I believe. So all these numbers, you know, that just kind of show how poor CSU has been for the last, you know, 5 years or so, would be wiped off the board. So people would be really optimistic. Whereas on the other hand, you know, if you lose, you know, one of these, there'll be some angst. And all those things that come with it, you know, the rivalry numbers would be brought back up again. So, yeah, I think it's a really important 2 weeks here for the Rams.
If you look at these two programs, this Nevada program and the CSU program, since really the 2020 and 2021 seasons, where Nevada was surging, you know, they were throwing the ball all over the yard, you know, and then as CSU was just meddling through the Steve Addazio years, which were painful, let's just call it like it is, you know, the one common denominator in these two programs and the subsequent extreme change in the trajectory of these two programs is Jay Norvell. He was a part of the Nevada program. He leaves. That place has gone completely downhill. He comes to CSU. You know, they're in position to compete for a bowl game. Where would you say, having covered this team this season and intimately getting to know Jay Norvell, that he feels like this program is and where it's poised to go for next year and beyond?
Yeah, I mean, this is the most positive trajectory I've felt for CSU in quite a long time, even though, you know, the record right now doesn't look that different. I've just, unfortunately, covered a lot of really bad football programs, and there are different markings and feelings around this program and what they can do, even just talent level. But yeah, I think Jay Norvell showed at Nevada he can build and win, and you're seeing pieces of that right now. You know, there's some talented young players. I think depth across the board is getting better. You know, you're seeing a lot of young guys start to make an impact. So those are all good signs in the, you know, building a program feeling. The locker room might be the biggest thing. And that's one of those hard, intangible things, you know, that fans can't necessarily know. But it was bad at the end of the Bobo era. It got worse in the Steve Addazio era. And it takes time to fix a broken locker room. And I think they're making progress there. I mean, CSU, I don't believe, maybe they have one reserve O-lineman leave midseason, but no midseason defections. You'll have some players transfer out in the offseason. Of course, that's, you know, that's just the way of the world right now. But it seems like a much more harmonious locker room. And you can see on the field, even though the execution isn't always great. You can tell just the intensity that this team is playing with. We've seen a lot of CSU teams that have quit in November over the last 5 years, and this team hasn't done that. So those are, to me, some of the good signs of the trajectory here.
So I've had a chance to witness this CSU team, the 2023 team, one time in person, which was the Boise State game.
You know, just a nice normal game. There,
just another day at the office, really. And then also against the CU Buffs, and just a heroic effort, and then a subsequent letdown. But one thing that I have noticed in some of my observations watching the first half, and I'm talking about the CSU offense, was painful. I mean, I'm just going to call it like it is. It was, you're going against a Boise State defense that is completely built to stop the run. You have reserve tailbacks, and it just appeared that it was just, let's just continue to run the football. And, I'm sitting there just as a former coach. I'm like, at what point are they going to activate the talent of Braden Fowler Nicolosi and his extremely talented, for a group of five, I'd say this is as good of a receiving core in terms of threats that can turn a 5-yard gain into an explosive play or can go over the top of the defense. Well, CSU figured it out in the fourth quarter to the tone of a 23-point come from behind victory, if I'm not mistaken. It was 30-10 and they won by 3.
What was the final score of that, Kevin?
Oh, geez.
No, they won by 1. It was 31.
Yeah, they won by 1.
31-30 on the PAT.
31-30, yep.
What is it? What have you noticed in terms of just this kind of like almost dueling identities of CSU's offense? It looks like there's times where they want to be a ground and pound outfit, and then all of a sudden you see the old air raid, the Hal Mummy influence, the Nevada offense. Where do you see this offense right now? Because when I see it, when they're balanced and ripping the ball over the field, they're very dangerous. When they are very, very like sticking to the run, it seems like they're almost playing in neutral a little bit. Where do you see this offense and where it's going for these last two really critical games?
Yeah, I think they haven't fully found the equilibrium of where they want to be. So they, obviously there's the poor game one, and then they gave the reins to Braden Fowler Nicolosi, and Jay Norvell basically said, breaks off, we're going to unleash it. And for the most part, that worked well against CU. They obviously put big numbers, but, frankly, should have won that game. And the offense did a lot of really good things. But then over the subsequent weeks, Braden Fowler Nicolosi and the offense started turning the ball over at a pretty alarming rate. So I think they tried to rein it in a little bit, be a little, try and sort of tiptoe into things a little bit. And for a while, it diminished the turnovers, but also diminished some of the explosiveness. So I think they keep trying to find that right balance of, explosive and attacking, but making sure to help BFN not be reckless with the ball, because let's be real, he can make some poor decisions, as you kind of expect from a redshirt freshman. So I think they're still trying to find it. I think that's why that the ground, like you say, the commitment that sometimes felt like an overcommitment to try and run the ball came to be. And yeah, there are times where totally I've agreed. It's like, you've got to just try and let loose, those weapons, you've got to get them involved earlier, but it's still just a work in progress. I think, BFN missed some throws last week that he should have hit. That would have, really buried that game earlier. So they're just really trying to find it. It's just an inconsistent group. They'll have a quarter where they look like one of the best offenses in the country, and then they'll have a quarter where we see a lot of Patty Turner punting the ball. So they just can't find the consistency. But, maybe this is a week to get that, because Nevada, while they have improved defensively, still overall are not a great unit back there. So, yeah, they're just trying to piece it together and figure out the best way to keep the ball in their hands but still be explosive.
He's Kevin Lytle of the Colorado. And Kevin, we'll be looking forward to chatting with you later on this afternoon for Rams Weekly. We'll dive into all things CSU Nevada, as well as take a look at that basketball team too. 3-0 to start this thing, and I'm pretty sure Isaiah Stevens could get an assist going to URI, Kevin, at this stage, man. That guy is something else.
Absolutely. He's that good. He could get us open in a way we could score, which is pretty hard to do.
Boy, that would be fun to watch. Kevin and I playing some basketball with Isaiah Stevens.
The real question is, could either of you actually slap the glass on your lay-in?
Absolutely not.
If we do the shoulders thing, Kevin, you jump up on my shoulders, man. We got it. We could probably dunk it.
I feel like we would crash.
Yeah. Kevin, appreciate you, man.
Thank you, guys. Fun talking.
All right. Kevin appreciate Lytle, Kevin. Fort Collins, Colorado. And fun stuff to talk to talk with about him and all the drama from last year with Ken Wilson, Nevada's coach, saying that Jay Norvell, as he was leaving, telling players, don't play in the bowl game. You should enter the NFL draft and all that stuff. And then a bunch of Norvell's players came to his defense, of course, saying this is all bogus, whatever. But it made for a very interesting football game last year.
And I actually think that sometimes, like, if you look at it from a coach's perspective, Ken Wilson may have lost the locker room by choosing immaturity.
Yes.
He chose violence.
That's a great point.
He chose violence. But he also chose immaturity, and he also chose to attack somebody that locker room believed in and that locker room had success with. And I think that's led to what's happened, a very obvious demise of this Nevada program in short order.
It's a very fine line to walk for coaches, right? When you want to build up confidence and you want to build up your team, but putting down the coach in that way can be very difficult. 10 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break. I got Mike Sanford joining me in studio all day. Also, I have the Jack Howell Show coming up. Safety for the Colorado State Rams and the noon hour. So we're looking forward to that conversation as well. We'll be right back. It's Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Stay up to speed with the Rams with the Isaiah Stevens Show on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Harrison Wynn with DNVR Nuggets. You're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Boy, I always think that I know football. But then you talk to a guy like Mike Sanford, and you're like, I don't really know football.
You know ball.
I know a little.
Quit being so hard on yourself. You're a tremendous slouch.
You know, with me, that's actually very true. Thank you for that. I can get dangerous on Madden a little bit. You know, I can air it out.
I can see that.
Yeah. Do you Madden much?
I haven't Maddened in probably 2 decades.
I'll teach you some things, Coach.
I was nasty back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Dude, things have changed a little bit.
Life changed a little bit.
Yeah, life changed. I don't play as much as I, because I have a kiddo too, and you know, the job and stuff. But I do play once in a while. So that's...
Now I'm starting to get my 7 and 9 year old boys are just all in on all the Madden games. And the thing that's so funny is to watch when they're rooting for a team on TV. So mm-hmm. they're watching the Broncos Jets game.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the Jets beat them. My son just immediately goes on plays on Madden, Broncos Jets, puts it on like rookie mode and beats them like 97-0. And he's like, Dad, look, I can beat the Jets.
What are they doing out there?
Yeah, just gosh, Sean Payton, he's not the head coach that I am.
Yeah, he might want to give him a shot at some point.
No doubt.
You can learn a lot from Madden. It's crazy. No, it's awesome to get you in here, man, because I've had so many takes over the years about why our coach is doing this, that would probably just make you want to murder me at some point. But luckily, a lot of those coaches aren't listening when I'm going off. But here we go. We have one in studio, so you never know.
You know what's funny is I've always loved sports talk radio.
Yeah.
Even since I was like a kid, my dad was coaching in Southern California. And I used to listen to old Mighty 690 with Jim Rome when he was just a local guy.
Yeah.
And awesome. and Lee Hacksaw Hamilton. You know, and so I love listening to radio. And actually, when I'm working as a football coach in Division I football, I even still tune in to national different radio shows from different areas of the country I've lived.
Even though you know they're full of crap most of the time?
Well, I never listen to the local one that I'm coaching at, because I don't want to have to drive down to a local station and get an assault
and start
charge.
Messing some people up. All right, the Jack Howell Show coming up next, and then we'll rejoin with Mike coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. It's the whole show powered by Chevron on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.